To the Stars Through Difficulties tells the story of three women, Angelina, Tracy Ash, and Gail. Talk to me about those three women and those characters as you see them.
Well, they've come to Kansas. Well, they're in Kansas for three different reasons. Angelina has come to work on her PhD dissertation, which is on the Carnegie Libraries. There were 59 Carnegie Libraries built in Kansas in the early 1910s, and she's been fascinated by them. She's been struggling with this dissertation for over 10 years, and she just has to get it done. Tracy Ash is a very challenged personality. She's an artist. She was found in a trash bin on Times Square as a newborn, just hours old, and was adopted out and has never really felt at home or had any kind of loving atmosphere. And then Gail, her house, in fact, her entire community has been wiped out by a tornado. So they end up together at the New Hope Art Center with a bunch of quilters, and that's where they start interacting.
So the book, as you say, opens with an F5 tornado that destroys the town of New Hope, Kansas. To what extent was this story modeled after Greensburg, Kansas?
A lot. But I have to tell you, I was probably 4 years into it before the Greensburg tornado happened. And so Gail was the newest character who was added. Now, that's a secret now that all of your listeners know. But certainly all of the information about the tornado came from Greensburg.
So talk to me about how does that tornado act as a catalyst to bring this story together?
Well, the thing that was really important for me was to be able to show it as a contemporary story, that even though it was these communities in 1910s that had fascinated me, I wanted people to really understand that even today, we all need to get together and build community. And so that was the sermon part of it, if you will. And so I really wanted that component. And the most dramatic way to do that is with a crisis. And of course, this week, as we're sitting here with hurricanes all around us, we see the validity of that.
The town of New Hope, there's a quote in your book that some would say it's in the middle of nowhere, but we prefer the center of everything. I'm just curious, was that an allusion to Laura Moriarty's book?
Not consciously, although I certainly love her book and I read it. But I have seen a few other references along the way, and I think it's just such a wonderful comparison.
So tell me what that means to be in the middle of nowhere versus the center of everything.
I think my book is a lot about self-esteem and how we think of ourselves and how we think of our places in the world. And I think that sometimes Kansans, and I'm one of them, can come across as being defensive about where we live and our decisions to be here. And other times we realize that we, you know, and I'm not living in Kansas now, I'm in Southern California, but that we have a groundedness that comes from having been raised in Kansas that really does make us the center of everywhere.
The town's library, which is a Carnegie Library, is really at the center of this story. Tell me how those Carnegie Libraries came about in Kansas, and what was the role of women in making that happen?
Well, that's the essence of the book. And they happened one by one. Interested women or interested people in a community, but they were mostly women, would come together and approach Andrew Carnegie for a grant to build a library in their communities. But there wasn't any statewide effort particularly, although there was a Kansas Library Association that would help them find how to do that. But it was one by one. These communities would determine that that's what they wanted. They would write him a letter. And the community itself had to pledge to provide the land and to provide 10 years worth of operating expenses, which those 10 years would add up to the total of the grant that was given to the community. And then he would only give $2 to $3 per person. So a few communities kind of stretched their population numbers to make sure they got the maximum amount of money from him. But there were 59 of them built in the state, which I think is just, you know, incredible.
Why was it generally women that were behind that effort?
I think for several reasons. Many of the women had moved here from the East. They had come out with to marry, to have families, and they missed some of the amenities that they were used to in terms of libraries. And then I think there is something innate in women that they just want to make their homes as good for their children as they can possibly do.
And that often includes a library.
And then in my era, because I worked here with the arts councils, it was women making arts councils.
You just anticipated my next question. Many towns converted their Carnegie libraries to art centers or community buildings in the 1970s. It happened here in Lawrence. It happened in my own hometown of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Why was that?
There were several reasons. There was a big national push for community arts, a community arts movement that happened in the 70s. And some of it revolved around the bicentennial. And that pride. There was a Main Street project, I don't know whether you remember that, that came into a lot of communities. So there was a real sense of renewal in terms of taking towns, but especially small towns, and improving them. So that happened. The Kansas Arts Commission here actually hired me to do outreach into some of those communities, so we talked a lot. The libraries themselves were challenged by the new ADA regulations. But it's interesting to me that although the ramping and all of that that they had to do was very, very challenging at the time, very few of the buildings across the country were actually raised. Most of them found a way to accommodate, and they found a way to find other uses for them, even if it wasn't as a library.
You just mentioned your own work throughout Kansas in that era. How does this story to the Stars Through Difficulties, how does that parallel your own journey?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I've been carrying notes for this book around for well over 30 years, and they've moved. I counted how many garages they've lived in since then and how many states, and it's a lot. And I never knew it would be fiction, but by working with the women at that time, and I was a very, very young woman then, and I was facing my own issues in terms of who I was and where my place was in the world. But at the same time I was doing that, I was meeting with women clear across the state who were also grappling with those kinds of questions. And I saw in them, and then eventually I saw in myself, the way their own self-esteem really grew, and they took a lot of power in terms of building their communities by being involved.
Much of this story takes place in the fictitious town of New Hope. There's another town, Prairie Hill, Kansas, which also features prominently. Talk to me about the divide between New Hope and Prairie Hill.
I saw rivalries that existed in this state based sometimes on where the county seat had ended up 100 years ago and continuing through, especially during consolidation of schools when people lost their football teams. Those rivalries I knew existed, and they provide a lot of dramatic action. Now, I have to tell you, I got taken to task in Western Kansas and told that Kansans are nicer than that, and and that, especially during a tornado, which I know is true, and in my book, after the tornado, they all open up their arms, but I do know those rivalries exist still.
The title of your book, To the Stars Through Difficulties, is, of course, a very familiar motto to those of us who are from Kansas. What do you hope to convey in that title to non-Kansans that read your book?
That's a good question. Well, non-Kansans, I find, have no idea what it means and wonder a lot about how I got there. But I think that I think it's universal in terms of our need to push on no matter what's put before us. I mean, I really do believe in the human spirit and its ability to make improvements.
By using the state, Kansas state motto as the title for your book, are you in some way really grounding this as a Kansas story?
Well, I think it's very definitely a Kansas story. But I have a reaction to that. And that is, some people said, oh, this is going to be big in Kansas. And I would put my hands on my hips and get a little bit defiant and say, but you know, I know a lot about Africa, and I know that from reading novels. So don't people care about what happens in Kansas? And actually, the reception's been very good throughout the country. It's not just Kansans who've enjoyed it, I think. So that's been very, very satisfying.
You grew up in Kansas. You attended KU, but you now live in California. Why come back to Kansas for your first novel?
Oh, it's still in every cell of my body. Kansas is, you know, is very definitely there. And like I said, this story has just stayed with me. That was a very important part of my life. And I think that it's a very fascinating era. I think the way Kansans make things happen is unique. And I really wanted to tell that story.
Can I get you to read a passage from your book? And could you set this up for us?
Okay, this comes from the very beginning. It's in the voice of Angelina. As you know, there are three voices. And Angelina is coming back largely because she fell in love with this Carnegie Library as a child. And that's been the inspiration for her dissertation. So I'm reading from her very first entrance into Kansas. I've been fascinated by Carnegie Library since my first and only visit to Kansas, that trip to visit my father's mother over 3 decades ago. What I remember most is reading Little House on the Prairie with my father. We sat close to look at the drawings. My memories smell of sunshine, because when we were in Kansas, my father always changed his shirt before he read to us, and that shirt had always spent the day flying on a clothesline outside. What I remember most about the book are Conestoga wagons. Conestoga wagons filled with families, leaving everything behind to start anew. Back then, more than anything, I wanted to be Laura, to wear pigtails, play with corncob dolls, drink from a tin cup, and win spelling bees. The Halloween after our visit, I convinced my teacher to help me construct a pioneer girl's costume, a bonnet made from a round Quaker oatmeal carton, and a calico skirt held in place with a hula hoop. I could hardly walk in that hula hoop, and I wanted to run away from home. When I dreamed of running away from home, I dreamed of running to Kansas. It was grandmother who told me Andrew Carnegie built 59 libraries in Kansas in the early 1900s. Before he was done, he'd spent $875,000 in communities that donated the land and committed to raising 10% of the capital costs for ongoing operations of a public library. As I look at the wide open space, it's hard to imagine how a literary movement would have taken hold here at the turn of the 20th century. Grandmother described Carnegie as a benevolent Johnny Appleseed kind of guy, and it was only later that I discovered his despicable treatment of mine workers, including the murder of 7 men in his attempt to break up the union. A few Kansas communities refused to take his tainted money even for the promise of a library. Should we or should we not forgive and forget? Was he redeemed because he gave the country 1,689 libraries that served 34 million people by 1919? I became fascinated by this man who was both a philanthropist and robber baron, obsessed as if he'd been a bad boy boyfriend. On the one hand, he believed the wealthy should live without extravagance and give away their excess money to promote the welfare and happiness of the common man. On the other hand, he was shrewd to the point of ruthlessness. My grandmother talked about the man as if she'd known him personally. She was as proud of that library as if she'd built it herself. Once she thumped her journal and said, "The story is in here." But she wouldn't let me read it. "Not now," she said. "It's a secret."